Hey, it's recording.
Okay, great. This is a meeting of the South Kingstown Sustainability Committee. It is Monday, May 17th. It is 6:05 p.m. My name is Angela Tuoni. I am here. I'm going to do a roll call. So when I say your name, just say here. Jim Norman?
Here. Yeah.
Chris Hubbard?
Here.
Mark Kravitz?
Here.
And Tony Silbert?
Here.
And Mark Russo?
Here.
He's here. And we have some guests as well. Kathleen Stanley?
Here.
Jonathan Daly LaBelle?
Here.
And Pam Lazada? I'm sorry if I butchered that.
Yeah, here. Pam Lazada.
Thank you. Okay. We have minutes from April to approve or not. Any comments on the minutes, the April minutes, last meeting? No. So resounding no.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I second it.
Okay, great. Any discussion? All in favor to approve the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous approval. Look at us. Okay, agenda item 4, correspondence and public comment. So 4A, Jim sent over the PowerPoint presentation from our last meeting. Thank you, Jim. Did you have any comments on that or just sharing? Okay, thank you. Chris sent an invitation to the Food Recovery for Rhode Island session. Is that through URI? Was that what I saw?
It is, yeah. And I think Mark D did attend it on Wednesday. I wasn't able to make it. My schedule fell apart, but Mark attended it.
Okay, great. Yeah, it looked great. We'll have to talk to him when he's around again. 4C, Jamie Rhodes sent some correspondence about the community choice. And we also are going to hear from Kathy Stanley.
Yes, Kathy will fill in on some of the, if you guys have any questions about that docket item, she'll fill us in of those issues that are going on. If they're normal or not, she'll let us know. Kathy, take it away.
So, yeah, I saw these two documents came through. When was the outstanding issues? Just listed out some of the, it looks like it's all really around data, information and data, what should be shared, what should it not be shared. You know, and typically the utility doesn't want to share anything or as little as possible. And typically there's other interested parties that need them to share some at least. And this is what happens, right? Everyone sort of goes around in a circle and pretty soon the PUC just decides what's going to happen. So that's what it looks like to me. I think that's all pretty standard stuff, actually. Whatever that shakes out of this in terms of what information is going to be provided on what schedule or level is going to be what it is. There isn't a lot of room for negotiation typically on this kind of thing. So that's what I saw. I don't know if you guys had any specific questions I can help you with. I talked to Nathan Cleveland at OER about this today. He's the guy I work with at the state. And he didn't have anything else to add except for what I just shared with you now. So I don't know if you guys went through all of this in detail or if you have anything specific you wanted to discuss.
Why is it our best interest? I mean, getting the most amount of information from the utility? I mean, what would we hope for?
Yeah, I mean, that they have to share a certain amount. So the aggregators are going to want to get as much information from the utility as possible because that's where all the information is. And the utility is going to resist doing an overabundance of work because it's expensive and because their systems are not easy. And they're mining this information out of their very old ancient databases is usually takes, like, they have to actually commit individuals lots of time to do stuff like this. Their systems are old and they've never been set up to really work with this kind of a program. If you think about what you're asking them, right? You're looking for meter data, customer data, for residential customers. So not the typical kind of stuff that they're used to working with, which are the largest users on the system. Those are the kinds of pieces of information that they can tap into really easily. So, and then the other part of what I read in there too was, you know, people that you have on your residential tariff and system that are enjoying discount rates for other reasons, you don't want those people to be disrupted and inadvertently put on a tariff or put on, not a tariff, because this is not a tariff, but put on a rate that would be not in their best interest without them having the ability to sort of opt out. So this gets tricky. I don't really think there's a position that we would have one way or the other on this. I think it's really, you kind of need to let your aggregator go to bat for you in terms of getting the information that they need. And that it's going to come down to the PUC basically saying, nope, you have to do this, whatever it is, at the end of the day.
So, Kathy, I have a quick question on that. What are the risks for our aggregation? I mean, is it going to hurt us more than not if they don't get all the information they need or want? Are we still looking at keeping the same amount of participants in this program?
Yeah, here's the bottom line is the aggregator needs to get as many people to participate in the program as possible in order for it to become economically advantageous for them to participate. So, like, for example, it's one of the reasons that we don't do opt-in programs. You wouldn't be able to get enough people to opt in to make it worth their while, because they're not making from their point of view, they're not nonprofits. They are people that provide electricity and natural gas to users, and they need to make a profit in doing that. That's what they are. That's what they do. So for them to be interested in providing a quote to an aggregation, there has to be, on a residential level, a lot of participants for them to be interested in even participating. If you came to them with a community that was so small in terms of the number of people who are participating, that it wouldn't make sense for them to do the work. It wouldn't make any sense from a business point of view.
Kathleen, are we one of those communities? Is South Kingstown too small?
No. As long as you have an opt-out program and not an opt-in program, you're going to be fine. Yep. The vast majority of people don't care. They should care. They should care greatly, because they're going to save money and they're going to enjoy a nice steady supply cost. Whereas right now, their rates are going to change every 6 months, whether they like it or not. And sometimes they're going to change by a lot. You know, you have a weird market situation and a really bad storm in the Gulf. And guess what? You know, things are going to go a little wacko. You're going to be picking up your electric bill going, wow, what's going on? So these programs are very good. And they also think it gives those of us who care about where these electricity is coming from, whether it's renewable or not, the ability to offer those options to our residential customers. In Massachusetts, we're actually doing that. We're giving customers choices. Like, they can say, well, I want to choose that 100% of my electricity comes from renewable sources and I'm willing to pay more for it. We can do that. So when you start to get into these aggregations, there's a lot of good stuff that can happen because of them, because of the programs. But just as a matter of economics, you need to have an opt-out program and not an opt-in program. So that means the aggregator needs, if the aggregator is the person sort of providing the service to you and doing all of this heavy lift around understanding these things, understanding these economics, and being able to provide a platform, a program to the suppliers, where they're interested in bidding on it. So that's the magic that the aggregator has to come up with. They have to make, and we're in a public realm and we're dealing with utilities and we're dealing with, you know, residential customers of a municipality. So there's a lot of sensitivity around things like this information and data and who owns that data. And so that's why there is so much around those topics, because they're important, sensitive topics to discuss, but they'll get through it. And I think you're going to have a very successful program at the end of the day.
Kathleen, has there been commentary from the PUC commissioners regarding this? And any idea, like any chance you could provide a brief synopsis of those comments?
So I saw two documents. One was a memorandum of outstanding issues. Some of them were contested. Should the customer information include the customer's competitive supply rates was a contested issue. I don't really know how they're going to, at the end of the day, sort of rule on this stuff. Should National Grid be required to produce duplicate EDI lists directly to aggregators? Gee, I haven't got a clue whether they should be able to do that, you know? But the documents that Mark sent out to me captures these contested issues and also outlines some issues that are not contested. And then there's another document, Good Energy proposed positions on this stuff with a really nice explanation of what each one of them is. And Good Energy, of course, is your aggregator. So they're the ones that are going to get into the mix here and try and figure out what's best for your program. So I would read those two over carefully. And I know that the Good Energy folks have people who are available to you to get into the weeds on this stuff if you want to have those kinds of discussions. But I saw here who that was. I might have to dig through this to find that person. But the Good Energy people, that document, have you folks seen these?
Yep.
Yeah.
That really goes into the detail of what their position is. And, you know, at the end of the day, whatever shakes out here it's not really something you're going to be able to influence, I don't think. I think it's going to really come down to utility and the aggregator and the PUC, because they're really in the know of all these little different details of what the utility can't do, what they can do, you know, what's worth haggling over and what isn't. I think at the end of the day, I wouldn't worry too much about these things, because I think you're going to be fine. I mean, they're going to obviously approve an aggregation program. I mean, why wouldn't they? Works everywhere else. They kind of have to. So that's like
my last question is just, do you know the timeline for this docket?
I do not. They, nothing happens fast here, you know. They'll haggle over all these little different details until they bang out something that everyone agrees to sort of move forward with. And I don't know what the time frame could be. What is Good Energy telling you? Anything from that point of view?
No. Oh, sorry about that. No, they haven't said anything. Basically, the timeline that I sent out to everybody, I don't know, maybe we're looking for June or July, the next meeting. I'm not sure what the PUC, I guess they're pretty.
Have you had anybody from Good Energy come to the Sustainability Committee meetings?
Yes.
Not a long time.
A while ago.
Yeah, a while ago.
Yeah, it might Jamie be time came.
It might be time for a revisit then. Okay. To answer some of these questions, because they're in front of these guys all the time. I mean, I picked mm-hmm. this document up and looked it over. I can certainly tell you from a high level what most things, from my experience, what happens. But they're the unqualified experts in this area and mm-hmm. have been instrumental to me and in Dartmouth and Westport, mm-hmm. two communities I work with in Massachusetts, just went through a whole new pricing contract with them. I'm very impressed, I got to tell you. They really know their stuff. And they're sensitive to the communication issues and that kind of thing. There was a public hearing that I jumped onto that Mark gave me a heads up to about a month ago. And there was only one question, and it was someone from the town who wanted to know why we didn't do an opt-in. Why did we pick to do an opt-in? You're not going to pick to do an opt-in. The model doesn't work. You know, you're not trying to be difficult with the rest. You're running the program the only way that it actually has any economic advantage for the people who it really has to. You know, it has to make sense. But I mean, they did a really good job when they did the contract renewal that we just went through in January. And those prices were all locked down, like, I want to say 6 months ahead of time. So we had plenty of time to follow the market, get indicative pricing. They had, of course, everybody's on a Zoom call because it was in the middle of a pandemic, but 22 communities had representatives on Zoom and followed all of those discussions just fine. So there, I think it might be time, Mark, to call your rep. And I can't remember, I know it's Phil Carr in Massachusetts, but that's not the same guy in Rhode Island.
Jamie? And ask him, would it be Jamie?
Either Jamie or Patrick.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea to ask them to come to one of your meetings and dig into the weeds on this stuff, you know?
Yes, give an update.
But that's what I saw. It was all sort of down to the wire, that, you know, how much data, how often are you going to make us give you, you know?
Yeah, but overall, it doesn't sound like the program's in jeopardy of not moving forward.
Not at all. Like that. Not if they're talking about
that's the biggest concern.
Yeah. That. No. They're haggling over now. We're talking about the pennies that are on the table. Okay.
Who's that's a good sign. 10%?
Very good sign. Yeah. Because, you know, the PUC is sensitive to this problem with utilities. I've worked for utilities, and it's a very serious problem in terms of trying to mine data out of databases that were built on, you know, software that's 50 years old, and they continue to try and upgrade and update to the best of their ability. But it's much more difficult than you could imagine from their point of view. So they are a little sensitive to that, because everything that they make the utility do means they're going to have to be some person mining that data out and managing that flow of information. It's not like, you know, you don't just push a button. So I don't know if that helps or not, but.
No, it does. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you.
My pleasure. If there's anything anybody else needs from me, just let Mark know, and I'm at your service.
I just wanted to say that we had Jamie Rhodes from Good Energy and the town council president, Abel Collins, in a local meeting that we organized from Climate Action Rhode Island to let the other towns know about the community choice aggregation. And that question came when in South Kingstown this program would come live. And Jamie Rhodes and Eva Collins, they say they believe will be this fall, October, coming live.
So Pam, I'm sorry, could you just announce yourself and tell us where you're from, just for the record?
Oh, sorry, I'm a South Kingston resident. I'm Pamela Lisaeta, I am very much for climate action, and I'm a member of the Climate Action Rhode Island. I'm also in the Sustainability Subcommittee of the school, trying to bring environmental education into the schools. And this is my first time in this meeting. I wanted to see what you guys are doing, and probably comments. I'll have something to tell you or about composting. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Great. Thank you again, Kathy.
My pleasure. Take care, you guys.
Thank you.
Let me know if you need anything. I'm here. This is what I'm here for.
Talk to you later.
Okay, moving on, 4D, we have Jonathan Daly-Labelle and Lauren Weinstock, again, might have butchered that, from the SK Smart Committee Outreach.
Yes, thank you for having us. I don't know if the Smart Committee is the newest subcommittee within the town, but we're definitely newer, and It stands for Statistical Modeling Analytics Research Tools. And part of our mission, we've been having people come in from different departments within the town, presenting certain aspects of what they do within the town, how they run things, what some of their needs might be, and how we might be able to help them, you know, with analyzing, planning, and you know, public works, and that type of a thing. Police have been in, building inspector, GIS, and so we're doing outreach now to some of the other committees. We met with the bicycle and pedestrian committee, and we're reaching out to you. So with your mission around the green energy and working on resources and public education, you know, how you're trying to develop the, you know, your goals for the town, whether we may be able to be of some assistance collaboratively to work with you.
Thanks for being here. Could you say what SMART stands for again? This is the first I'm hearing of it, actually.
Okay, it's Statistical Modeling Analytical Research Tools.
Okay.
And we're a committee of 9 people. The town manager, Rob Zernitsky, is our staff member. And great. Yeah. And so it's kind of we have a variety of talent, you know, people who, you know, do the analysis and statistical looks, data, breaking down how to analyze data, how to present data, among other things. And so, yeah, we're just trying to be available and collaborative, help people, you know, help the different groups with their thinking, you know, hopefully with some of their thinking.
Well, Jonathan, that would be great, because we've been wrestling with in the compost realm, and there's been talk about, you know, trying to, you know, get information together as to costs that the town incurs due to, you know, waste being taken away. And we've talked about trying to get a study done, and maybe you can help us in this regards with that and with the solid waste problem that we have and those issues.
Yeah, I had talked to Rob briefly about this, Jonathan, and thanks for joining us today. This is awesome. But just how difficult it is to get data around the amount of biosolids that the wastewater treatment plant sends to both the Rhode Island Resource Recovery and to the incinerator, and what the trucking costs are associated with that, and just all these bits and pieces of, you know, waste that doesn't need to go to either incineration or a landfill, and just start to really be able to add those up and put dollar values to them. You know, where is all the restaurant waste going, and what are they paying to dispose of that, and grocery stores and consumers? So as Jim started saying, I think all of that information helps us start to paint a picture of the feasibility of some sort of townwide composting program.
Sounds like a challenge, and yeah, maybe there could be some efforts in collaboration to help break some of it down and figure out how to move forward.
You said you've got 9 statistical wonks on your team. You gotta love a challenge. We're excited.
We can expect the data by tomorrow morning. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, cross tabulated.
Lauren has would be able to speak to so much of this much better than me. So, you know, Lauren, if you want to.
Sure. And I apologize. I'm sitting in a parking lot in Providence at soccer practice, and my video on my phone's not working. So I'm joining you as best as I can doing the soccer mom thing.
Hi, Lauren.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Yeah. So you know, at this point, it's really, this is just our initial outreach. And I think if you feel that there's some way that our committee can be of assistance to you in either contemplating how to collect the data that you feel could be useful in moving forward your agenda items, or if you already have a sense of where those data come from, how we can help compile them for you. But really, really, we have the expertise on the committee to think about operationalizing your data collection, how to gather the data, how to analyze the data. We have different levels of expertise on the committee. We have people who are engineers. We have people like myself who have PhDs in the social sciences. We have other folks who are more kind of like an economic perspective, healthcare. So, we, you know, if there's some kind of qualitative data collection that could be useful to you, that's also something we could talk about.
That's awesome.
Qualitative data collection or analysis. And really just wanted to let people know we exist as a committee and exist for this purpose. And so really just to start the conversation and get you thinking about what your needs are and how we can assist you in any of that. It sounds like you have some really pressing things that you're working on at the moment that potentially could be a good fit.
Three things would be helpful. Compost study, the solid waste research that's like 20 years out of date. And then the other thing would be a sustainability dashboard, much like Providence has. So if I were to say those are three, would be any one of those would be amazing. All three would be like a home run.
And just real quick, as a little bit of a sidebar in the conversation that I was having with Rob, he was saying, and he has a good point, that one of the things that the town employees are facing is so many of these different committees kind of asking for a lot of the same data and really being taxing on the already overworked and overstressed departments as it is. Maybe, and he and I batted around some ideas about some sort of steering committee or kind of management committee around it, but maybe just thinking out loud here, you guys end up being a really good clearinghouse for all of that kind of stuff. Just that as you guys go forward, that may be something you want to talk to Rob about more.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we have a meeting, I believe it's either this Thursday or next Thursday, and we can go back to the larger committee and report out from our conversation with you this evening and kind of let them know what you're thinking and what your needs may be. And we can start talking as a committee about how we can continue to continue this conversation and build out a way that we can support your needs. You know, having kind of a wish list of three very concrete things is great because that's something we can bring back and discuss with them and then kind of revisit with you.
This
Jonathan,
is awesome.
Do you have any more to add?
Yeah, Lauren, real quick.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to know who the chairperson is for this committee.
That would be Henry Thayer.
Okay. And Mark Russo, just a quick suggestion, but even looking at the list on the South Kingston website, it would be good to have the terminating degrees on listed there. I think that would be, I would provide strength to the optics of this list. I think that would be really helpful. If they were added. And I was looking at some of the bios and there's some really impressive people in this group.
Yeah, I was just going to say, working off of what Chris was saying, the clearinghouse piece, a lot of what, mostly it's been department, people from different departments coming in to talk with us. And there has been some very vibrant, substantive conversations. So I do think that just by, you know, coming in and having us at a clearinghouse or, you know, some form of sounding board, even at a minimum, I think that there has been some value through our efforts. It sounds like this, you know, again, I would go with what Lauren is saying, you know, bringing the, you'll have conversations about this. We'll bring this back and we'll have conversations about this with the SMART committee. But it seems like there could be more, a deeper level of collaboration.
Jonathan, have you guys done any projects? Like what are, can you highlight one or two of the projects you've worked on?
I'm not quite sure that if we have something you could, that we could really sink our teeth into, to be honest with you. We're have been together. It's kind of slow going because we basically formed right at the start of the pandemic. Right. And so we're a little over a year and, you know, kind of at the start, not the best time. But I think, like I say, as people have come in, as the different departments have come in, there has been a very, there's been a lot of collaborative conversations where I think we're adding something to the thought process. But I mean, Lauren, is there something you can think of?
No, I mean, well, there are a few, there are a few smaller things, and I think not really reflective of how I think the committee was envisioned to be a support to the other arms of the town government, but because we had our first meeting in December or January before the pandemic hit, it really has been slow going, but we have been working with the town manager. He's particularly been interested in developing a user-friendly tax calculator that people in the community could kind of plug in various values that are specific to their personal circumstances that could help them estimate how their taxes might be affected by various initiatives, town budget, you know, this recent school bond, although that has failed. So the tax calculator was one project, and we've been still tweaking it and revisiting it. And another one has been related to the schools. There's been some just kind of internal analysis of data related to some of the enrollment trends and that kind of thing. So really the outreach to the other committees has just begun. I think the bike and pedestrian was maybe the first or the second outreach, and you would be the third. So we're really just kind of getting our legs under us now.
That's great, thanks.
Can I say something? I had no idea about the SMART. I didn't even know. That's great. I have a PhD in geoscience, and so I have a lot of experience with data science, and but my interest is in sustainability. So if I can be a liaison, I'll be happy to. I do statistical modeling in R. I can use also Excel VBA for analysis. Geostatistics. So if you tell me what is the problem, or give me an insight of what is that dashboard, sustainability dashboard from Providence, I can study it and see what is the need. If you have something more concrete, I'll be able to help you.
I'll send a link.
Okay.
Also, Pam, I believe they're still accepting applications for members to the Sustainability Committee if you'd like to apply through the Town Council.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's why I thought you were here.
How are you doing? You have no excuse.
Yeah. So that's great. I am curious. So Lizetta brought up, Lizetta brought up, you know, regarding R and sort of the analytical tools. Have you all gotten into that level of depth in sort of the tools you'd be utilizing, whether it's R or Power BI or whatever other tools you might be utilizing for like these types of dashboards?
Well, we really haven't had a project that has required us to make use of the software. I mean, I'm a professor at Brown. I have access to various software that I use in my own analytic work. And we have Kristen Johnson, who's a poli sci professor at URI. Mm-hmm. She, you know, has, I'm sure, I don't know exactly what she uses in her own analysis. I'm mostly a Stata person. I have a biostatistician who I work with who does runs things in R for me, but I don't think he could do that for the small committee for South Kingstown. We have other folks who have access to, I mean, so it, we haven't really reached that level where we're running analytic models for any particular purpose at this point. But we all have different levels of expertise with that, given that we all, I mean, professionally, we've all have different backgrounds.
Figure out the school transportation thing, and then we'll mirror it with the solid waste collection.
Right.
Well, this is wicked cool. And I'm excited to hear that South Kingstown has something like this. This is pretty fantastic. I am curious, in putting this together, did you assess other towns or cities throughout the country that have something similar to compare with? Because this seems, I've never heard anything like this before, of like a volunteer committee doing, you know, helping a town establish an analytical framework for assessing itself. It's pretty amazing.
Rob's trying to get free help.
No, I get it. No, I think it's smart. You're talking to the nonprofit guy who has over 70 volunteers doing very similar work for us. But so I'm just curious, you know, are there other towns that have had success doing something like this, or is this some trailblazing work going on?
I personally have no idea. I believe the committee was really our town manager's brainchild. So I suspect he had some inspiration from somewhere. but I don't know for certain. I know that he shared with us, or maybe it wasn't him, maybe it was Henry Thayer, our chair, but some work that's been done in I don't know if it's the county of San Diego or if it's La Jolla County. I don't know exactly what the name of the county is where San Diego is located, but I know we all visited their website together in a meeting, and they have a really nice infrastructure where they integrate a lot of kind of real-time data into their reporting out off of their website. And we were talking about ways we could emulate some of that, although they have a much larger budget to do those kinds of things. But other than that, I'm not familiar with any other communities that have a committee like this.
Mark Russo, what's the best way to get the dashboard out? It's to folks. Is it to send it to you? And do you send out to those that are participating, to Pam and Jonathan and Lauren and others?
Being the staff liaison, Tony, yes. If you send it to me, I can get it to somebody in the town manager's office or wherever.
I was going to put it in the chat, but there's no chat in this. There's no chat on this Zoom.
Also, if you just Google Providence Sustainability Dashboard, it's the first. I think it's the first thing that comes up, if that's helpful.
There's two different ones. There's one that's called performance.providenceri.gov. So there's two different, there's a couple of different ones, but they lead to the same space. One looks more like a dashboard, but it's the same areas, which is very cool for the city of Providence.
If you get it to me.
I was just going to say that's something very concrete that we can take back to our group and take a look at it as well.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
That's great. This is really exciting.
Yeah, really, really fantastic. Thanks, Lauren and Jonathan.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being so receptive.
Yeah.
We're excited. We're going to use you. That's why.
Definitely appreciate it.
Because we've been around for 3 years and we're trying to figure out all the projects that we have or have not done.
Okay. This really calls for a happy hour somewhere when this meeting's over. I'm just saying.
We're getting to that point now.
We are.
Yeah.
Losing the masks.
Yeah.
But we'll take shifts so we don't hit a quorum. So
There we go.
First.
Well, thank you guys again.
Thanks for having us. I'm going to duck out now because I'm going to go grab
my fun at soccer.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Take care.
Do you mind if I hang in just for some of the conversation for a little bit?
Sure.
Thank you.
Now would be a good time, I think, for public comment. So Pam, if you want to take the floor, it's yours.
Sure. Can you hear me? I don't know if my microphone is.
Yeah.
It's I haven't been in any of the other meetings, so you probably have talked about that before, because I see it. Sorry, I had it written on my phone and I can't enter it. I don't know if you are aware, you're probably aware of this. If you go to the Rhode Island Recycling Club, I think they have a town ordinance or guidance to require a school district to reduce food waste. And this is a town of Woonsocket. So they already have a compost plant for all the schools, but it's through the town. And I was wondering if you guys have been discussing something like that. If you go to the Rhode Island Recycling Club, they point to that. So Woonsocket schools participate, and there are like 18 schools participating. So, and it's through the town, and they sell the food waste is actually collected by a farm. It's called Blue Heaven. It's a pig farm. But here in Rhode Island, I thought, well, why don't we have this here? And we have Earth Care Farm, and somehow make it like a program through the town that have all the schools recover their food waste and to have Earth Care Farm involved, because I know that they are looking for more organic waste. Have you already discussed that?
I thought they were collecting waste from the schools.
Well, it's only
pre-pandemic, there was some pilot work going on.
And it's all parent volunteers. So we started that at West Kingston Elementary
School.
Right,
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's all parent volunteers. So as soon as the parents move out from the school, the program falls out. And we haven't been able to have something through the school district. And I thought if the town get involved, that would make it more sustainable. And also take the opportunity to use not only for the schools, but also for municipal, or invite also restaurants or businesses.
Yeah.
Well, I think that would be the area to be most interesting to the town for composting, is something that will help to reduce the cost that the town incurs. And I think they just have to find out how to have someone in each school that will facilitate the collection of materials, because we did speak to some people in previous meetings that could collect and take it to Earth Care Farm. There are companies that do that. Roadside Revival was in and spoke to us, or at least a representative. So it really comes down to who oversees the collection of the material inside the school, I guess, you know, a staff member or whatever. That would be the major point to address.
I think the motivator for the Woonsocket town to have the town taking the lead is because it's a money saver. I think they save because instead of having so much waste hauling from just normal trash, they have been able to divert that normal waste and goes and it's paid. They pay them the hauling service for food. I think it says here like they have saved them like $17,000 a year. The 360 tons of food waste. So that's also data collection. So if we could collect the data, how much actually could be diverted?
Yeah.
And how much money would save?
I think it's a really, really good point, Pam. And I think it's something, you know, the committee is really just in the infancy of taking up the whole composting thing on hopefully a much bigger scale, you know, kind of a town-wide scale. And certainly the schools and the food come from the schools are a big part of that, not only for the waste themselves, but for the educational opportunity and the community outreach and things. So I think it's a point very, very well taken, and it's something we need to make sure we include as we start to get into the composting plan or research or whatever it is we're doing here.
Go ahead, Angela.
I was just going to ask if the South Kingstown, the school sustainability, that's a tongue twister, school sustainability group has focused on composting at all, or is that just not sort of on the agenda?
So what we're doing now is recommending policies for educational curriculum, and the other is for waste management. And we haven't done much because of the pandemic. And so tomorrow we have a meeting, or the 19th, to discuss the policies that will be recommended for the, there's a new committee, it's called Policy Committee, where the Sustainability School Committee will recommend some policies regarding to waste management, but it's recommendations. There's no...
I know with waste going to Earth Care Farm or compostable material, the cleanliness of what's going in is the most important thing. If anything has any contamination in it, non-organic material, that causes a problem. So once again, it comes down to how do you ensure the material coming out of the school going to Earth Care Farm is free of contaminants. And I think the collection part and moving it to Earth Care Farm is the least problem, as the problem is how do you keep material free and clean of contaminants.
I think that's doable. When Pista was doing it, when they deliver it to Earth Care Farm, they check it. I mean, Woonsocket does it, and they send it. They is for the pig farm, so I guess they do it. At Earth Care Farm, they wouldn't do it. It would have to be done by whoever delivers, or yeah. Do it at the end of the school, or when you go to Earth Care Farm.
Pam? Do you know what the business model is in Woonsocket? So, like, does the group that delivers the material get a certain amount of composting? Is that the business model for the why the delivery company does that?
So that's something that, would you be interested in inviting the person who started it? He's in the town council. It's from Woonsocket, and it has been running for many number of years, so it's very sustainable. It's something that you'll be interested in having.
Yes.
As a guest speaker?
Yes.
Yes.
So we'll have to contact
It's a no-brainer. All we need to do is find out the cost savings. The town would be very interested. And if there is a win-win for whoever's delivering it to get X amount of compost, I'm assuming that's what the big, you know, again, I think what Jim was saying is it's got to be clean. So the delivery is probably an easy part, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, if there's a successful model in Rhode Island and someone wants to, you know, help us with the playbook, I don't see why we wouldn't want to take advantage of that.
Or steal shamelessly.
Hey.
Okay, so I'll find out if he would be interested, and find out the person, and if he'll be interested in joining one of the sustainability meetings. And to tell us about how he started this model.
And Pam, we had someone from in the Center for Ecotechnology at our last meeting, and they are funded, and their goal is to help communities move towards this, and they offer any type of technical support, and they're working with Providence right now with their composting. Program. So
is Mary Korean?
Excuse me?
Is Mary Korean? Who was the person?
Korean, she came to
she's great. She came to West Kingston to give us some tips on word recycling and composting in the school. That's a very good information too, a source of support. And I think that maybe Woonsocket, they use eco technology. So that's something that we would learn from. Whoever is the person agrees to come, I'll let you know. Yeah, I have your emails.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm doing research. I'm looking at this Rhode Island Recycling Club. It looks like Narragansett Elementary does something similar as well. But that's great. Yeah. If we can get more brains we can have access to, the better. Thank you for coming, fam. Okay, so
my job interview went well, Pam.
I mean, is there a formal application? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it looks like this. No, there is an application.
Okay. In the website, I think, the town, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to move on to agenda item 5 discussion. 5A is compost concerns. This is our rolling agenda item where we talk about our compost concerns. I think teaming, it sounds like some collaboration between the school sustainability committee and our sustainability committee on a composting effort or movement forward would be mutually beneficial. That's what I'm getting from today.
Yeah, and I apologize. I started to do a little more looking into funding availability for a feasibility study, and I've had a couple of very, very preliminary phone calls, but nothing solid yet. But so I'll keep working on that.
I think if we can put together exactly what metrics would be helpful. I know, Chris, you were working on this. And like I think Lauren had mentioned, having a concrete wish list of actual data that it possibly could get pulled for us or analyzed or okay. Whatever it is.
I'll share with you, Angela and Mark. I think you guys are copied on originally kind of the wish list that I had put out to DPW that met with a sounding resounding silence. No, that's not true. It would have been what information that I would have assumed would have been readily at hand as part of record keeping turns out to be a lot more difficult to put hands on than I thought. So maybe I'll share the list that I had come up with you, share if you want to share it with the committee or start to come up with something concrete around it.
Yeah, if you want to share that with me, that would be great.
What it was just trying to get a quantifiable total of the quantities and the different types of materials that were being disposed of from SK, you know. And I think with that information, we can start to put a dollar value around a composting plan.
Sure. Okay, great, if you wanna share that with me. And I'll share with the group, because that's what I do, or is what Mark does, mostly.
Chris, now that we have Jonathan on the line.
You muted yourself, Mark.
I said, now that we have Jonathan on the line, who's decided to continue to hang out, could you outline the key trash categories that are typical in our town?
Okay. Well, certainly probably the single biggest one are the biosolids coming out of the wastewater plant. And I forget the exact split, but something like a quarter of it goes to Rhode Island Resource Recovery is landfill, and three quarters of it goes to, and I think it's Woonsocket actually, to incineration. So there's all that organic material that we're paying to dispose of and all the trucking and handling costs associated with it. Very, very compostable, very valuable materials to be reused. So that's one source. Then there's obviously all of the consumer waste and the residential waste, everything, whether it's picked up by these 8 or 9 or 26 different trucks that are running around everybody's street that has a contract, or we take it to Rose Hill ourselves and have it shipped up to Resource Recovery. The last characterization that I saw, something around 40% of the total intake at Resource Recovery is organic materials. So that's food, you know, obviously those types of things. And then I think the next, probably the next two biggest ones after that are restaurant waste and grocery store waste, spoiled foods. And I just have no idea in this state where it goes. I think it's private haulers and they go wherever their contract is. It may go out of state, but those numbers, I just don't know. And I think you capture all of that. You have a pretty good handle on the total amount of material and types of material that are being disposed of.
Well, I know Shaw's, all the material there goes to a pig farm and all their spoilage in the bakery produce. The meat goes to rendering. So none of that is going to be disposed of. It's being okay. Used. I do believe that.
But even that, Jim, at what cost and how accessible is it for, I mean, is it something that they're scrambling with all the time? Would they benefit from having something much more local? Would it be cheaper for them? I think these are all the things that we can explore.
Oh, yeah, sir. Yeah. And then, but I think also that it'd be worthwhile try to set up some sort of educational thing that we tend to do to get people to start doing composting on their own property and at least take that chunk out of the waste going up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What can we do to tie these thoughts at our town level to the state level from a policy perspective? Because I know Providence has its own, but I'm just thinking from a state perspective, where do we fit in and how do we align with that, with the state, or help lead
those
the state?
Those are good questions. I think I don't know, you know, there's a lot of moving parts to it. I did a few years in the whole trash and recycling business. I think kind of the big elephant in the room, or the big grill in the room, I guess is the saying, is there's a lot of money made in trash. And you combine that with the fact that nobody wants to spend money on their own trash, that I don't know what the push is at the state level to do this kind of thing. I guess personally, I was almost taking kind of the opposite approach that, wow, if we could kind of be the leader of it and SK goes from 40% of our trash going to landfill is organics to, I don't know, pick a number, 10%. And our total trash to landfill goes down by millions of dollars a year. All of a sudden we kind of become that role model for doing this, right?
If I can, I'm trying to think more regionally in general with my thinking. So even just, you know, I mean, I think starting in one town makes sense, like Chris is saying, but then, you know, working off of what Tony's saying, like, you know, Washington County, because the basic demographics in Washington County are fairly similar.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially the solid waste issue has to be done regionally. I can't imagine that. I suspect it's going to be complex, much more complex than the food issue. Yeah. And that would be something that the more, you know, everyone's in the same boat, every town. So what, you know, if the state's not going to do it, then definitely something regional should be.
Except that one of our biggest challenges down here for all these things, right, is transportation. We're a pretty big geographical area with a low population density. So running all this stuff around town and getting it to some point becomes a big part of all of this. You know, just
I'm just looking on the Rhode Island Recovery or Resource State Waste. Yeah. And they've got, like, at the state level, they've got waste recycling, refuse disposal, solid waste regulations, you know, promotion of paper bag usage. So there's a whole bunch, obviously, at the state level. So I don't know, you know, where you, we're trying to have an impact locally that could also inform statewide.
Yeah. They have a little bit of an interesting dilemma up there too, right? They're quasi-governmental agency. That's where all the MSW in Rhode Island goes to, and it's the only place it goes to, I think. They need X number of dollars per ton just to be able to afford to pay everybody up there and keep the equipment running and the doors open and whatnot, right? So they have this constant balance of being doing the right thing and reducing waste and getting trash down, but they need enough coming in to be able to keep the doors open and keep it running. So they, and I'm not saying that they don't want to see reduction in recycling, but they need a certain amount coming in to stay operational too.
I was just going to say, Jonathan, for your information, the older website, this is now a new website for resource recovery, but the older one estimated the landfill filling up at the end of this decade, beginning of next decade. So there's a timeline dynamic to this as well.
Yeah.
That's going to line up really well with the highest level impacts of the climate crisis then.
Yeah.
Can I say something? So the only statewide bill that I know that is sitting for further study is in education, is for school waste recycling and refuse disposal, and that would require not only schools but any educational institution that produces a minimum of, I don't remember how many tons a year, to compost. And this is the H5328. If you go to the General's Bill Assembly and then check for that bill.
And how many years has that been? How many years has that been in committee now, though?
Well, this is a new one. It has been rewritten because lower the threshold for compost. I think it needs public support. That's why it doesn't go anywhere. Every time it's scheduled for hearing, almost no one speaks in favor. So I wanted to bring that to your attention too. It's in the Committee of Education. There's two bills, one in the Senate and the other is in the House. It's 104, School Waste Recycling and Refuse Disposal. And that would require all educational institutions that produce at least 30 tons, I think that's a threshold, very achievable, to compost. And the Rhode Island Resource Recovery Center will need to provide a waste audit to all these educational institutions once a year to see how much waste they're producing and how much is recyclable and how much is organic. So that would be, you know, a great first step if that gets approved. This is all for public education and also, as I said, institutional education like URI, any state college.
I thought that was already required. I thought Mike Murder told us that.
But there is a very, very large threshold so that this bill would require for institutions that produce, because I think the current threshold is 50 tons, so it would go down to 30 or something like that. You need to read, I'll need to read the bill to see the numbers. And also it's provided that you have a compost facility within a certain mile of radio in your proximity. So for URI, it would apply because Earth Care Farm is nearby. And also for all the public schools here. Because altogether, I already made my calculations, altogether South Kingston public schools, they produce more than that threshold of organic waste.
But all of them combined, right?
All of them combined, not individually, but if you at the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reading and writing. I was also looking at the Providence composting page. They're doing a lot of things that I think we should be doing. Even just their aggregation of resources around composting, whether that's home or drop-off locations or you know, advertising different restaurants that are composting, or you know, just the resources that Providence offers, I think is another thing that would really be an awesome thing for us to try to do as well. That doesn't require starting a program, but rather just making resources more accessible. So that's something I'd like to look into as well.
You got me thinking about, I'm working with the Food Fix campaign, which is about trying to fix, it's a policy advocacy national plan. And one aspect of it is around soil health for carbon capture. So I'm just trying to think of how do we up our game? Where could we have the biggest impact? So food waste, 40%, that's a huge one. That's always, but how do we, you know, tie the composting to carbon capture so that it tells a story in what we're doing? So the composting creates more soil. Soil is better than dirt, has richer nutrients, all that kind of stuff. So I'm just trying to.
And it's also, it really comes down to anaerobic digestion versus aerobic digestion, right? Huh. You bury the stuff in the landfill and let it rot. It creates methane gases and all the really bad gases. You know, you do it as compost, it creates carbon dioxide.
Gotcha. That's about as deep as I go.
Yeah. So burying it bad, composting it good. How's that for greenhouse gases?
An anaerobic, I want an anaerobic workout, right?
There you go.
That's going to get confusing.
So, and to that point though, Tony, there's a move, and it's just starting to take off now, about being able to trade carbon credits and stuff by using reclaimed materials and compost and you know, residuals from processing plants and whatnot. So this national board that I sit on is just starting to dig into that now. We formed two committees to start looking at that. So if this starts to play out and you can actually start to buy and sell these carbon credits, that could be a real game changer for compost production too.
Bitcoin for composting, got it.
Bitcoin for compost.
I never hear that word again. Okay. Okay, so it sounds like, you know, working with the schools, school committee, school sustainability committee. Those are all different things. Chris, you're going to send me sort of a wish list and we can work with the new SMART committee that we're so excited exists to see if we can get some data and sort of move those things forward. That sounds good to me. Cool. Anything else on composting or solid waste? We kind of lumped those two together, I believe.
No. Okay. Therein lies the problem, right? They're all lumped together.
Yeah. Sorry, Chris. Gosh.
I have a question for Chris Huber about the compost plan that you were mentioning. Where would that compost plan be? Is that a proposal or an idea that you have?
It's just very, very 30,000 foot view preliminary right now. Again, just my off the cuff thought is some of the land trusts down here have done a really, really good job acquiring property. Now they've saved them all from building and development and whatnot, but maybe they don't have any funding sources or enough funding sources for maintaining the pieces of property that are great for hiking and recreation and whatnot. And who knows, maybe a piece of their property is a big field somewhere that just happens to be the right location for a composting facility. They make a little money by leasing it, and somebody operates a compost facility and makes some money on it, and it all works out. And again, it's none of this has been proven out. It's just.
Or something that maybe the town would want to run it, or?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any other town that they have their own compost. I know that there's towns that they do the shrubs, right, the leftover from trimming.
Bristol, Rhode Island composts all of their biosolids coming out of their plant. And if he had space available, he says that he would add a food train into it as well. He just doesn't, he's just penned in for physical space. So it, you know, it can be done. It is working.
Well, so now we have Earth Care Farm. I know they're looking for more organic waste.
Yeah. And yeah, that was one of my thoughts too. And again, I'm thinking way in the future here, but maybe the thing, they're awesome at operating a compost facility. Maybe we put a train in right next to their organic train that's not organic, and the compost that comes out of there goes for land reclamation type projects and roadside stuff rather than the organic stuff that they sell at a premium for food growing.
So, this is very long term. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to move on. We are going to move on. Agenda item 5C is committee concerns, future agenda items. I have a question from Mark Russo. Is the new membership advertised? It sounds like yes. Yeah, it's up on the website.
Last I saw it was yes.
Okay. Great. So we will patiently wait.
I mean, I'm not sure if this is the time when I had sent something into Mark. I think that in regards to when we have guest speakers in, that we should bring them up to the front of our agenda. I mean, for example, last month with Corianne, I mean, she sat there for 40 minutes waiting for her turn to speak. And similar thing has happened when Mike Murner and Jane were there. And it seems that if people are coming to our committee, you know, generously give us their information, we should potentially set the agenda so that, you know, other than our general housekeeping work that we do, I think it would be the right thing to do is to bring them up first.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Duly noted.
And on that note, you know, I don't know if we run into this, but probably just not having more than one guest,
mm-hmm.
Or planned guest, I guess I could say, just so that one doesn't have to sit through another presentation, kind of, yeah, on the same idea.
Just scare Jonathan away?
Yeah, that was the goal, so.
Pam's still here, so she's doing well on her job interview.
Agenda, the only other thing I have is I really want to talk about this dashboard. Again, can we include that in our next meeting? That will also make me do something about it.
The one other thing, just real quick, for the future topics, and again, Mark can probably speak more to it next week, is this whole food sustainability program that URI is developing that seems to be taking hold, and it probably ties in nicely with the one you're working with, Tony. Certainly local food and just enough food to keep it out of the waste stream and all those things could be a huge, huge part of sustainability. And I'm not exactly sure what our role is in it, but we should certainly start to look at that, I think.
Yeah, it would be great if Mark could give us a rundown of what he's learned also. I really want to use this SMART committee. I really want us to take advantage of this. So my thought is I'm going to come to the next meeting. I hate committing myself to future things, but coming to the next meeting with maybe what we can use them for, because I'm thinking the dashboard, the sustainability dashboard thing, like we mentioned, what sort of metrics we may want there. And then Chris, maybe that the solid waste list, wish list you had, we can talk about that too in between. Just so we can have sort of a productive discussion next month about that.
Just tell us what we need to do, boss.
Listen up. Get it
together.
You're doing
good. Yeah, you got it.
I think after 4 years or something, I get it together.
Okay, goodbye, guys. I'm leaving.
Bye, Pam. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Another thing is maybe we want to have Jamie Rhodes back. I don't know if we have any other guests planned for next meeting. But I can reach out to him or Mark. I don't know if you are in touch with him more often, Mark Russo.
What would be the purpose? Because from what I understood, the PUC goes in, we wait, it gets approved unless there's some stuff. So I actually wasn't sure what we need other than unless there's some big red flags going up or someone's trying to block it. Isn't it just going to go through and there's a certain time cadence? I don't know how this thing works, but that's what my question as we were getting updates, that's what was going on in my head.
Sure. Yeah. It sounds like everything's going to be fine and they're sort of in the weeds right now. But overall things are looking good. I think the idea of having Jamie here was just to say like, this is what's going on. And I don't know if we want a detailed update. We could also probably just email him and ask him for that.
That's my thought. My thought is, what's the time frame? Are there any objections? Are things moving along as planned? And when will this go out? When will this, is it October? Is it September, July? I don't know.
I did think he gave us a time frame on one of the earlier.
Yeah.
Long time ago, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was basically, it's written down that this autumn we were going to be moving towards education and outreach. And I think the goal was to be to start the program this winter.
Sounds like it still adds up.
But he could.
We're
still going to be operating with a Zoom. I mean, he wouldn't have to attend our meeting. We could just ask him to Zoom in for a moment.
Sure. I also wonder. I'm kind of interested in just hearing from him because I'm interested in the program and I like Jamie. So I wonder if it's a better use of his time if I or Mark or I reach out to him and say, hey, here's just what's the timeline? Are there any crazy objections going on? Can you just give us a brief sort of layperson overview of what's going on? And then I can share that when I have it. Is that okay? Mark, it's okay if I email Jamie, right?
Okay. Yes.
Cool. Just giving myself homework here.
Yeah, I think you have to remember too that the pandemic put a lot of this stuff PUC wasn't meeting for a long time. So
yeah, that's right.
We were supposed to be back out. You know, we were supposed to go out to the auction, I think it was February. So we get, you know, the summer we're supposed to get going, but
right. You know. That's what I remembered.
Yeah.
Summertime. So I was like, is it June or July? That's a month from now.
I remember that we weren't going to start the program till winter when the rates were higher. So that whatever rates our aggregation was offering was at least had a more competitive view to it than if we started in the summer when the electric rates were lower.
Jim, you're probably right. You remember many more details than I do.
I'm not sure about that, but.
Well, I like the idea, Angela, about the dashboard, the food, solid waste, mm-hmm. sort of composting, and what research we could do with the SMART committee as like a way of moving forward and supporting the efforts that we're trying to move ahead. And I like, you know, the more I do this national campaign, the more I think of how do we shift or inform stuff that's going on at the state or connect the dots where like towns like Woonsocket or others are already doing stuff. It seems like, why should we have to keep trying to figure out who else is doing this stuff or if we're doing it first or, yeah.
Great. Any other concerns or future agenda items for next month? You can email them to Mark up to the Tuesday before.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
What's the date?
Well, I'm going to be on vacation the week of the 21st. So I'm looking to see if we can go to the 28th, which is the following Monday. So it'll be 4 weeks out.
Take us on vacation with you.
Mm.
That's it. You know, I nearly broke the bank, Jim, getting the airline ticket. So.
Where are you going? You don't have to tell us if you don't want to.
Yeah, I'm going to Colorado, visit my son.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, great.
Yeah. So, I won't be back until mid that week, the 21st. So I'll be pressed to get the agenda together, and I'm up to the Secretary of State's office by that Thursday when I get back. So if we can do it on the 28th, that'd be great. If not.
Yeah, I can do the 28th. That's fine.
Yeah, that's
fine for me. Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Mark, I have a question just because it's been a consistent topic, but I know the bond failed, but is there anything move, like does anything, what happens now is essentially is my question.
We have there's a school building committee meeting tomorrow night at 6:00. If you wanted to, I guess you don't zoom in, you can watch it on ClerkBase. And I'm sure there'll be some details coming out. I haven't heard anything, Mark, to be honest with you. It's been quiet, stunned silence, I guess it is, but.
Sad. I was shocked that it actually, maybe I shouldn't have been shocked. I saw those signs around town and then thank yous that went up.
Right. So. That's where it stands now. Like I said, we have a meeting tomorrow. I was surprised to see that agenda come across, so. We'll see what's happening. Melissa was going to come to this meeting, but she really didn't have anything to share. So,
yeah,
right.
Other than a tear, but
Melissa,
right. So, so that's it.
Thanks, Mark.
Sure.
Yeah, I would be interested. I mean, I don't know if the wound's going to take a minute to heal, but if there were any sort of school projects coming up that we could advise on or give input on, I'm still interested in that as a topic that is interesting. And
well, I know right now that they are, school department has gone through the office of, actually went through National Grid's OBR.
Okay.
I'm billed payment scheduled to do all of the elementary schools in the exterior of Broad Rock, the parking lot and the building.
Lighting, yeah.
All, yeah, convert the entire building to, LED. Yeah.
Great.
So that's it's about $1 million project there. So they'll be reducing their lighting load and costs. And, if you ask me, when I have a building retrofitted, it really it breathes new life into a building when you upgrade the lighting. It really looks a lot better and it's easier to work with and people are happier. I don't know. That's just me. But so we'll see what the kids how the kids work out. So
I think there's a lot of research to back that up too, Mark.
Yeah. I know the school department was spending a lot of money with an electrician just replacing ballasts and bulbs, and it was just that's all he would do for weeks in the summer, and they won't have to do that anymore. So, yeah, it's great. And so now that this bond has failed, they'll be looking at doing Curtis Corner and the high school as well. If you get through OBR and get some of those incentives back from the National Grid, so. That's what they're doing right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
Good to know. Okay. Next meeting is the 28th of June. That's June. Insane.
The days will be getting shorter at that point.
Hell, Mark.
You've been waiting this whole meeting to say that, haven't you?
He sees it as saving time.
Right.
Oh, God. Okay,
anything else? Anybody else? No? Was that a wave or a hand raise?
That was a goodbye.
Okay. Hint taken. Meeting adjourned. It is 7:32 p.m.
Take care, everyone. See you.
Hi, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.